As we continue to discuss the future of higher education, we continue on a conversation about innovation. Yet, to discuss innovation, we must also talk about the internal process that occurs at a university in regards to this topic. How do professors, faculty, administrators feel about this same issue? Do questions of seniority and tenure get in the way in terms of looking at innovation? Or is it something that can be beneficial? Aside from the questions of seniority and tenure, there's also the question of building consensus. Is building consensus over time beneficial to an innovative process or counterproductive? These are the topics that we bring to the table today for the FutureX podcast. I'm Hector H. Lopez. Let's go to our moderators for today, Matt Alex, Isabel Lagadic, and Terry Gibbons, as they welcome back Dr. Mark Lombardi of Maryville University.
I want to go back to the question or the topic around consensus. So Isabel, do you want to craft the question to Dr. Lombardi in terms around faculty and the question you were raising yesterday?
Thank you, Matt. Hi, Dr. Lombardi. Thank you very much for being here today. I'm a faculty at what we call a four-year institution here at Northern Kentucky University. How do you convince your faculty, especially the ones that are reluctant to changes, to not only to come on board with you and not only to buy in, because every faculty buys in what the president is saying. Yeah, it's great. It's a great strategy. But to actually implement and actively participate in the implementation of your plan. So not just say, like, we agree with you. This is a great idea. This is what we should do. We should go. We should. But actually, let's do it and see the outcome of that being done. So that's my question for you. Thank you very much.
Ellen, it's a great question. And let me answer it with an example, okay? In 2014, we went out to Apple, a couple of faculty members, myself and someone else. And we really bought into the idea that we wanted to go with a one-to-one initiative with the iPad. And I would say that I made that decision that day when we were out there. When we came back, briefed senior staff, and we basically worked out all the structure of it budgetarily and everything else. And then we brought together a group of faculty, some who were already using iPads, some were already in the space, and others that weren't, and staff as well, including some of our learning design support staff. And had a meeting and said, we are going to do this. We're going to implement a one-to-one in fall of 2015. I'd like all of you to work on an implementation plan. This was in August of 2014. And they all were sort of apprehensive and said, well, what if we come up with an idea that the administration won't fund? And I said, whatever idea you come up with, I guarantee we'll fund it. And then somebody asked the same question again. And somebody asked the same question again. And I said the same answer. And then someone said, please, didn't you hear him? He said, we got all the money we need, no matter what we come up with. That was number one. So we took that off the table. The second thing was, we have to have the plan. It's August. We need the plan by December so we can begin implementing. Oh, no. This is going to take a year. This is going to take a year and a half. This is blah, blah, blah. Said, no, we need it by December 1. They actually delivered the plan October 15th, even though they weren't sure that they could do it. We deployed iPads to all of our faculty in December, and we did it on a peer-to-peer because we already had a number of faculty in the space. And we delivered them to all freshmen for the fall 2015. A year later, we deployed them across the university. Been a huge success. My reason for using that example on consensus is this. Had I gone to the faculty or anyone and said, should we have a one-to-one initiative, use iPads, they'd still be debating it for the reasons that you mentioned. So the way you break through consensus is not ignore people. It's not don't have them involved. It's you take the decision, there's a stumbling block decision at every good idea or every innovative idea. You take that decision off the table as president, and you involve and engage as many people who want to be involved in implementing the decision, not whether or not we go there, but we're going there, and we're going to fund it and support the hell out of it. I want this group to help us figure out how to do it. And I'm going to say this, and I mean this as a former faculty member, when you take that approach as a president on most things, people get excited about being asked to shape the process. They get excited. Faculty get excited about, I'm being asked to be engaged in delivering this. And they stop debating whether or not we should. Now, what's happened at Maryville is we've done that from 2007. We did several decisions like that. And thank God, and thanks to a lot of good work by people, they all were hugely successful. So when you build a track record of success doing it that way, then it becomes part of the culture. And then you're not having to get everybody, faculty and staff, for example, to agree, as you said, on the color of the toilet paper anymore. Because you know what they do? Over time, they say, you know what? We'll leave that to the administration because we're focused on our student learning.
Hey, Dr. Lombardi, we have a follow-up from Dr. Givens, who's on the stage. Terry, do you want to go?
Yes, please. Thank you. And thank you for being here. I have been a provost and a vice provost, and now I'm at McGill University. And we could have a ton of things to talk about because I've been seeing this shift towards the digital era since I was a vice provost back in 2006. But I want to follow up on the faculty question. And the reason I focus on this, because I think this is a big stumbling block that we need to fix now, and it's going to take a huge amount of collaboration, which is graduate students. And we know that, you know, actually, if you look at the top 100 schools, the faculty there are almost, you know, 100% coming from the top 20 institutions, you know, Michigan, UCLA, Berkeley, Stanford, Yale, whatever. And they are not getting trained to teach, first of all. And secondly, they're not getting trained in what's going on in the real world of higher ed. And then even faculty, I started my company because faculty were not being trained even to become, you know, managers or provost, because I have that's my experience. I had no training. I had very little, luckily had a lot of mentors and support when I became a vice provost and then a provost. But, you know, given what you're doing, and I believe in a yes and model, that we can do what you're doing as well as so many of the other things that people cherish about institutions today. But what can we do to collaborate and try and really change the way that graduate students are trained so that they become faculty who are ready to enter this world?
Oh, first of all, God bless you. I was a provost, so I know how difficult that job is. And great question, because I think you put your finger on the biggest challenge we all have, which is the talent pool in graduate schools is not being educated or trained in any way to embrace or understand these things unless they do it on their own. The only answer that we have found, and there are two ways to attack the problem. One way is to obviously, where possible, bring in the practitioner talent, what I call practitioner talent. And it includes learning designers. It includes people who came out of the private sector who decide they want to teach and so on and so on. And bring them into the culture of the academy to really work on that level of it. And that's a challenging issue. The other one that's a challenging strategy in some ways. The other strategy that we've developed is intense faculty professional development. And then again, here again, we were talking about during this time of going to one-to-one about professional development for faculty and bringing faculty like myself, for example, who were educated in the 20th century and frankly, from a digital standpoint, were dinosaurs. How do you get these people to embrace all of this and so forth? And I, you know, all of us have experienced this. You know, administration says professional development's important, and then they have a workshop and they give you a box lunch and maybe if you're lucky, $25. And so they say it's important, but they're not putting money behind it. So we came up with the idea that if professional development's important, here's what we're going to do. We're going to add 2 weeks to every faculty member's contract, 1 week in May and 1 week in August. And we're going to pay them 2 weeks more salary. So they're going to all get a 2 week bump in salary. And the Center for Teaching and Learning, which is a faculty run center, is going to be in charge of, with the provost, by the way, Dr. Givens, is going to be in charge of designing these 2 weeks, 1 week in May, of professional development, and the vast majority of the focus of that is on digital tools of the future. It's on technology. It's on all kinds of amazing ways of utilizing AR and VR and all these things. And we implemented it. In fact, our Real Week is going on right now on campus as we speak. And we didn't police it. We weren't saying, you know, you have to. And every year, including during the pandemic, 90 to 93% of our faculty participate. They love it. It is not only a collegial atmosphere, but it's a place where people who are learning new things don't feel uncomfortable because they're being mentored and by fellow peers and friends of theirs. And what's happened in that environment, Dr. Gibbons, is the young, innovative, dynamic, whatever you want to call them, faculty have become empowered to help their fellow colleagues. And it's I'm not saying it's fixed the issue you referred to, but I will tell you it's made a huge difference. So now when we hire faculty in, we do an extensive, probably 3-week orientation. And a lot of the orientation is not about, like, you're a political scientist. Like, it's not about the political science department or anything. It's about the digital tools of the future and the future of higher ed. So it's a long road. I mean, it doesn't happen overnight, but we've found that we've had success with those two strategies.
Dr. Mark Lombardi has served as president of Maryville University since 2007. In that time, Maryville has achieved unprecedented growth and earned national distinction for leading a digital revolution in higher education. Dr. Lombardi is the 10th president named since the institution's founding in 1872. He's also the author and co-author of multiple books, the most recent being Pivot, A Vision for the New University, published in 2019. This episode was recorded live on Clubhouse. Check us out at the FutureX Tribe. It was produced by the FutureX Tribe, Beyond Academics, and the Next Global Organization. Executive Director and Chief Moderator, Matt Alex. Edited by BNext Media. I'm Hector H. Lopez. We'll see you next time as we continue our discussions with the higher ed changemakers on the FutureX podcast.